Never before in the history of motion pictures has there been a screen presence so commanding, so powerful, so deadly. He's Conan the Librarian.
Can you tell me where I can find a book on astronomy?
Don't you know the Dewey Decimal System?
Conan the Librarian.
I'm sorry. These books are a little overdue.
Conan the Librarian.
Tonight, only on U62.
We're friends with Ed Chavez.
Oh my god, you are?
Yeah, we...
Yeah. And we...
Yeah, we hung out with him at... he shared our room at San Diego Comic Con.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I mean, we met you a little bit at San Diego.
Oh,
but
wow,
you did?
Oh, crap.
People
mom, no, no, yeah, I'm sure... Out. I'm sure you meet tons of people all the time.
Oh, they are? Okay.
What with being a famous manga celebrity now
what?
And all.
Oh, I see. No, but so... So, yeah, so this is our interview with Jason Thompson, whom... Oh, no. You can answer if you want. I heard your interview about the book a long time ago on the Manga Cast, actually.
Yeah.
And it was pretty interesting and very funny. And Ed really played up the sort of shonen thing, like, you're going to be the guy who read every manga, and it was like a ridiculous story. But and we read your interview in the Comics Journal, which was really long and pretty much a comprehensive life story, which is also covered in the panel that we just recorded, so there's probably not really any need to go into, like, your work history or anything like that.
But no, yeah, no. I mean, it's all just a typical life story of a boy who likes manga and anime, and ended up making a deal with the devil to become an editor of Shonen Jump, and you know, and then other tragic things happened.
So the devil is Trish Ledoux.
Oh no, Trish Ledoux. She's not the devil. She's like a kind of half devil.
Yeah.
You know, the artist just wanted to draw a character with angel wings. You know, that's all. There's no deep meaning in it.
Sorry for not bringing more than one mic, but yeah, the artist just wanted to draw a character with devil wings. I read the first two volumes of Stray Little Devil, and I did, like, the author's note is, I just wanted to draw a series with a girl with devil wings, and I'm like, that explains why there's no plot or content of any kind, just a lot of cute pictures of people with devil wings.
Increasingly sleazy.
So I guess we should go to our sort of questions.
Is
this like your book tour, and what's your book tour like?
It's sort of a partial book tour. I've been to a lot of conventions over the summer, and I knew I had to go to Manga Next because it is the first convention to dare to have manga in the name of the convention. So I was like, this is where I must go. And of course, I even mentioned Manga Next in the book. I don't know if you've read that part yet, but I thought it was very cool that a manga convention had been announced. I mean, of course, America's used to comic conventions, but not manga conventions. And it'll be interesting to see how it evolves. Now, I'm also doing some signings in the San Francisco Bay Area and LA, and hopefully some other places, which I haven't firmed up yet, so I probably shouldn't make off wild promises about how I'm going to go to Alaska or anything like that. So,
since you've written this book, do you think now reporters from the mainstream media are going to call you as a manga expert when they need, like, manga advice about stuff? Or has that already happened?
It has sort of happened already. I'm ready to take them on. my experience has been that no matter how popular manga becomes and how good the Wikipedia entries become, the reporters and my parents will always not know anything about manga and will always ask the same questions. So, I'm prepared to try to educate the masses. I mean those of them who haven't already educated themselves, of course. So.
I want to know if your parents read your comics,
yeah,
but what?
I wanna know
he wants to know too. But also, there are many articles in the mainstream press that are sort of like every once in a while, the New York Times or a newspaper is like, "Hey, people like manga," and it's like the most basic article of, "Here are some books," or they get some facts wrong. But yes.
Well, Wired magazine is doing an article on manga in an upcoming issue, and I actually wrote it. Yeah, but it's interesting. It is a manga about history of manga.
Oh.
Yes, Wired's art department picked an artist to illustrate it, and so it's basically a comic scripted by me and drawn by another dude whose name escapes me at the moment. But a Japanese artist that they picked up.
Sweet. Is it like a continuation of Yak Fist or?
No, it's no relation to UK Yak Fist. It is, in fact, it's just a story, you know, narrated by a cute girl because, you know, Wired felt strongly that, you know, cute girls make good narrators. I was like it should be narrated by a hot Bishonen, and you know, they're like, oh, you know. But yeah, I mean, clearly if manga has changed over the past 5 years, if anything, it's now you know, if anything, one now thinks of, you know, Bishonens and you know, yaoi, you know, and more and less of like a, you know, and less of like Love Hina and you know, and traditional you know, the traditional harami, you know, shonen. The gender, like, you know, stereotypes have flipped, you know, 180 degrees, and it is now, I feel, the manga market is now more better represented by, you know, by female readers than by the traditional, like, male American comics readers.
So, do your parents read your comics?
Do my parents read my comics? Do you mean my book or my webcomic and my other comics? They haven't read the book yet because the book isn't out.
Right.
But no, I don't think my parents read my webcomics. I mean, since it's partially autobiographical, it's probably for the best. They're aware of the existence of it. I mean, if they have read it, they haven't confronted me. They've read my other comics. They read my H.P. Lovecraft comics, but no, I don't think they read the stiff. No, my parents are very cool, but I don't believe they're webcomics readers.
Okay, ask because my parents listen to this show. Oh, no, my mom does, but cool. All my other questions are ridiculous.
No,
no, no, they
good.
Keep going. Bring on the ridiculous stuff. Okay. We'll come back to that one.
Trish LeDoux is a devil or an angel.
It's just a bid to get her to listen to this show where we put the title as,
no,
like,
no.
Trish LeDoux, and
no,
so she
no, no.
pays attention.
I owe her a lot. I owe her a great deal. In fact, she's thanked in my book.
Yeah, I dedicated my book to the people. I dedicated my book to the people who got me into manga and the people who got me my job at Viz. You know. Although many of them aren't even working at Viz anymore. So, but it's just been really dedicated to those people who happened to be at that interview at that time, you know, and got me the job. You know, it's not dedicated to Viz as a company, but rather to the people who happened to get me my in the manga industry.
All my other questions are ridiculous things, like, what's Patrick Macias like as a roommate? Like, did he take out the garbage?
Oh, well, Patrick Macias and I were, we were roommates for, like, about 2 years. So I had just moved to the city. Okay, before I'd moved to the city, we'd both gone to the summer camp together. What was it called? It was a summer camp for the arts. We were both in the film program. At that time, Patrick Macias had a shaved head, and he had just done a film about a dummy. So he was really into film. He was even making his own film at that time. And I had a feature in the, like, alumni newsletter where it was like, look what Jason Thompson's doing. He just graduated from college, and he's working at Viz.
The alumni newsletter for the camp.
For the summer camp, yeah. We didn't go to college together. And so then Patrick Macias calls me up and he's like, hey, Jason, I hear you're working to Viz. Would you like to have lunch sometime? And he doesn't talk like that. He talks much cooler than that. And then he is like, we hung out. He's like, hey, I'm looking for a roommate. So I ended up moving in with him. And the very day that I moved in with him, I don't remember if I told the story on the panel, but the very day I moved in with him, Viz announced that they were canceling Game On USA and I was going to be working part-time. So yeah, that's there I was, this jobless roommate for Patrick Macias. Although I was only partially jobless. Working part time was actually pretty awesome. I got a lot of comics drawn working part time. In any case, you know, Patrick was pretty awesome. We watched a lot of movies together. We also watched a lot of Italian horror movies and a lot of obscure monster movies and Japanese monster movies and of course all of Neon Genesis Evangelion. So yes, it was an educational experience. And while we're living with me, he got a job at the Viz warehouse, and from that he moved his way up to the editorial department.
But was he packing boxes?
Yeah, but you know, that's nothing unusual at Viz. There's lots of people who are now in the editorial department started out in the warehouse. Ian Robertson, he's an editor. Urian Brown, Reginald Rhodes, they're all, and like Jerome Abelard, James Abelard, they all started out in the warehouse. The warehouse was like the talent pool of Viz. It was also where we would go to play Counter-Strike. We played lots of Counter-Strike there. I actually played a lot of Ultima Online, too. But I would play until like 3 in the morning, and Viz was in kind of a bad neighborhood. So then I would have to like walk home at 3 in the morning. And anyways, then I got tired of Ultima Online because, you know, there was never anybody on. So, but yeah, lots of Counter-Strike and lots of various Quake mods.
Nice. Oh, yeah. I also wrote an article for Otaku USA. I wrote the Tekken Concrete film article.
Oh, my God. Of course. You told me.
Yeah. And I hadn't read the manga when I read the article, when I wrote the article. So now I have read the manga and my opinion of the film is different. But I think going at it from a fresh perspective, that's like one way. I think I might have said in the article that I hadn't read the comic, but anyway. Okay, I want to know, so how does the star system work in the book? And like, when you farmed out reviews to other people, like, what did you tell them? Like, what kind of manga gets 4 stars versus no stars?
Well, I mean, I tried to have all the reviewers be people that I really trusted and that I knew would do a good job, like Shane and Garrity and Julie Davis and, you know, Patrick Macias. There was a few cases where I disagreed so strongly with some review that I had somebody read. Well, I mean, I couldn't ask someone to change their opinion, so I was just like, well, thanks for the review, but I'm gonna rewrite it myself. I'm just gonna replace it with my own review. I'm sorry. So, and luckily the people I talked to were cool with that. It is kind of interfering, but I don't know. I just there's some manga that I just couldn't. I had my opinions were so drastically different that anyways.
Any titles in particular that you?
Okay, I do not like. I don't think Saint Tail is a great manga, and I hate to immediately turn the subject to porn, but I don't think Bondage Fairy is as bad as porno manga goes. Let those just be two simple examples.
okay.
Yeah, there were lots of changes, but no, I mean I didn't. I mean every basically with the exception of like two or three reviews, everyone who wrote for me, I you know just trusted their opinion and let it stand because you know they're all people that I knew. And I'd say the stars are accurate. I'd say they're accurate in about half a star. I mean, in retrospect, it'd probably a lower Inuyasha and raise Zatch Bell, a lower Naruto and raise Bastard, a couple things like that. Yeah, but it's a balance. In any case, the stars actually were Del Rey's idea. My original idea was just to do a book of, you know, unrated reviews. It seemed actually doing the stars was good because it helped me sort of. Because then I had to actually literally go over everything and try to decide whether, how I felt about Kari Kano versus Hanakimi, you know, and all this other, every other manga in the book. So
I was kind of interested to hear that you'd originally started with a 5-star scale because it is, on our way here, I was talking to Aaron about this, and as things are ranked in the 4-star scale, you have Akira, 4 stars, and then Happy Mania, 4 stars. Now, Happy Mania, it's a good series, but it's not the Akira of Jose, right?
That's true. That is a bit arguable. Actually, to be honest, Happy Mania was originally 3.5 stars, and I changed it to 4 stars after great deliberation, because I think it's a really good manga. I think Sugar Sugar Ruin is better. The thing about Happy Mania is that basically, well, first off, it's kind of dithers around and doesn't take ages to. It goes back and forth and takes ages to go anywhere. Secondly, the art is pretty immature at the beginning. I mean, I think Miyoko Ono is one of the greatest, you know, Jose and also shoujo artists that I can think of. And I really like all of her work. So yeah, yes. Like I said, let's say a half star buffer. I mean, I think among Jose. I mean, if you can say, name a translated title that, you know, of the Jose genre that you would say, you know, is superior to Happy Mania. I mean, and of course, Antique Bakery is superior to everything, but I don't know. What would you suggest?
Well, that's
you
yeah,
really,
it's a yeah, hard sell.
You really like anti-Tramps Like Us.
I didn't like Tramps Like Us, and I guess Nana doesn't count as a Jose title, although 3.5 stars, I think, is what it was ranked. And so everything is accurate within half a star. But one of the questions, I guess, that we have for you is that were the reviews, I don't want to suggest that there's an agenda or a bias behind the reviews, but it seemed as though perhaps many of these things were geared towards making Jose saleable or making it more well-established,
well,
I guess.
That's a good question. Now, I was just going to ask. I was already thinking. I mean, after what I had said about Happy Mania, I mean, it's not like I sat down and I was like, there must be a 4-star Jose manga. You know, it's not like I felt like that. Yeah, so it's kind of a... the 4-starness of Happy Mania is kind of... It's arguable. I do think it's an excellent manga. It's just really, with me, it's the question. I mean, it's not perfect manga. You know, then again, Iron Walk Down is probably not, you know, it's probably not exactly a perfect manga either, but it's a really fun manga. Of course, I had someone else review that one, but, you know, I agree with, you know, their rating, and I've read the whole thing. Well, I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, inescapably, I'm pretty old, and, you know, my taste, I do incline towards, you know, I mean, they do incline, I mean, I'm interested in seinen and jose, and I'm interested in stuff of which less is available in English. I mean, perhaps, because, you know, there's so much shonen and shoujo available in English that it's perhaps a lot easier to see the cliches, you know, and the stereotypes that arise. Whereas with jose, there's little enough that a lot of it is still unfamiliar. I mean, there's jose that I liked and I didn't like. I mean, I said Over the Rainbow, it's pretty bad jose. And on the other hand, I think, well, for what it is, I thought it was rather manga Wedding Eve is better than that. But nonetheless, but yeah, I mean, there's even within jose, there's many ups and downs. And the review of Dream Hotel, I think, is pretty, and Nurse Call are pretty excoriating. I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed most of Sakurazawa's work. I mean, some of it was a little blah in the direction of, like, the angel stories.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a real shame that the second volume of Aromatic Bitters wasn't translated, because I was really liking how that story was developing. And I do think Ono is great, Mayoko Ono. I know, there's not a... If you're talking, did I intentionally give high ratings to, like, weirder and obscure stuff? Well, I gave high ratings to stuff that I felt was interesting. And, I mean, perhaps if, like... Perhaps I'm less jaded. There's some areas in which I'm less jaded. But it's not like I planned out and I was like, you know, there must be... it's not like I planned out and I was like, I will try to get people excited about Salaryman manga. I mean, I like the idea of Salaryman manga, but, I mean, I think it's interesting. But I don't think Sakashima is, like, exactly a great manga. And, you know, certainly the most of the, like, educational Salaryman manga that have been published are more, like, fun and, like, a ha-ha, look at this way, than, like, an actually, like, this is actually good to read way, you know.
You have a panel to go to right now, and so we have
okay,
to...
whatever.
Right.
I've been given permission to be late to that panel by my excellent panel, the co-panelist, so...
Okay,
so you're coming... Okay, well then, in that case... Okay, so, in your opinion, off the top of your head... Who are the, if you had some crazy question about manga, who are, like, the top five Americans you would go to who are, like, the manga experts? It could be Canadians.
Okay.
North Americans. They don't have to still be living in the U.S. They might be living
in
Japan.
Okay, well, definitely the people that I respect most in terms of their opinion on manga, and not, well, not me, of course, is me, followed by Jason Thompson.
Right, right.
No, Frederick Schott, of course. Frederick Schott is the author of Dreamland Japan and Manga Manga. Matt Thorne, do you know Matt Thorne? Matt Thorne is a manga teacher at a university in Japan. Prior to that, he was famous for being one of the first Americans to, like, be really into shoujo manga. And he was the person who picked out Viz's few, like, shoujo jose books that they released in the 90s. So that's two. Third, Carl Gustav Horn. Of course, he is now, like a living god.
He made the Carl Horn pins.
You were the ones who made them? Oh my god, those are awesome. And you were the ones who dropped them off.
Yeah.
I wasn't there when you dropped them off. No. I was like, who brought these mysterious pens? Yeah, those pens are incredible.
People at Air Force trade them for stuff.
Yeah.
Around their office. Cause really few, I sent them a few sets to the office, and they were like trading toys for them.
Yes.
Using, like, cigarette butts in prison.
Yeah. Well, Carl himself is a modest man, so I'm sure he would not. He probably wouldn't trade them, but, you know. But it's awesome that you made them. I'll tell you a story about Carl Gustav Horn. I know that I'm interrupting the list of people.
Not
but
at all.
Carl Gustav Horn, in Viz, in somewhere around, like, 2003, 2004, I believe. 2002, maybe. Viz, who was a little more becoming more corporate at the time, decided that everybody who was going to be at the Viz booth at Anime Expo, or no, at Comic-Con, had to wear a polo shirt, a Viz polo shirt. They're like, Carl Horn was like, well, I'm... Carl Horn was still working at Viz at the time. He's like, well... I would prefer not to wear a polo shirt, because Carl, of course, always wears a suit and tie, or at least a shirt and tie. And they're like, no, you have to wear a polo shirt if you're going to be working at the Viz booth. So Carl bought his own ticket down to Comic-Con and flew to Comic-Con and didn't let Viz take him, just so he didn't have to wear a polo shirt. Because Carl Horn wearing a polo shirt is like... It's like Luffy wearing, like, a jeans jacket, you know? It's just not the same.
We have a friend who like used to work at Dark Horse, and she said whenever she forgot her umbrella to work, Carl would like loan her his umbrella because he always has one. He's trying to be the perfect gentleman or whatever.
Yeah, no, Carl's great. So my list would be Frederick Schott, Matt Thorne, Carl Horn, Ed Chavez. For boys love manga. Okay, well now it starts to get mysterious. For older manga, I would certainly say either Trish LeDoux or Toshifumi Yoshida. I also greatly respect Tina Anderson and Casey Brianza. Casey Brianza. She's the writer for Anime Insider.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good people out there. Those are the people who I think are really on the ball.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean Trish LeDoux and Toshi basically taught me everything when I was starting out of Viz. So.
Should we go to your questions now?
No, well, I'm sure. There were no reviews that I profoundly disagreed with, except maybe one.
Yes.
You only gave High School Girls 2.5 stars.
Yeah, I don't know. High School Girls. That was a little arguable. You know, the case could be made, I think, that it deserved a full 3 stars. It's a pretty interesting manga. It's probably certain, yeah. That 2.5 stars is kind of a dangerous area of uncertainty. High School Girls, I felt it was this same could be said of practically any kind of moe manga. And High School Girls isn't really hard moe, but it's kind of directionless, and it's a cute story, and it has some really nice, insightful character bits. The art wasn't very exciting. At some level, it's just feels like a story about like you know what crazy. It's kind of like the reverse of the boys' school shoujo manga. You know, like what crazy stuff like boys get up to when they're all alone. You know, crazy stuff girls get up to. You know, and I don't know. I find it kind of hard to get excited about either of those genres. I do think High School Girls is better than the average boys' school manga. Maybe this is just me speaking as a boy, but I like High School Girls better than Hanakimi, for instance. Let us speak no more about Hanakimi. Yeah, it's a tricky call.
I was just disappointed I got the same rating as Peach Girl's Size Story, which was terrible. Some really on-the-nose dialogue, but I think Noah has questions about
Peach Girl's Size Story. Yeah, I haven't read the final volume at the time when the book came out, so... I can easily believe that it really turns to crap even more so than it is in the beginning. I mean, I was very fond of Peach Girl, but so Size Story, disappointing, and you know probably worth looking at again, and you know in any updates to the book certainly.
Yeah, and it's sort of the author keeps making notes towards the end of the series where she's like, "Well, had a baby. I'm not going to be able to continue this. Sorry, end of story." Like. There are no. It doesn't end. It just keeps going. End. Yeah. It's just sort of like I don't know when the next volume of this will ever come out.
Now it's like I've revealed my.
She only wants to do.
By revealing I hadn't read the ending of Peach Girl.
It's not really worth it. I think volume 2 is really the worst. There's some very like on the nose dialogue that's just like now I'm going to sleep with this guy, but they actually say now I'm going to sleep with this guy kind of thing, and it's just bad. But anyway, we thought that yes, High School Girls was better than that.
It is, yes. You have a valid point. So there's certainly a couple of cases where the argument could be made that I should be roundly like beaten up at Amazon.com, you know. So I mean, I did say, I mean, you know, I say that the size story, you know, it's clearly a disappointment compared to Peach Girl. I mean, yeah, I hadn't read the final volume at the time, you know, when because it wasn't out, and I couldn't find it anywhere when the actual text was due. So, you know, I was holding out like a faint hope for it because I mean, she's a competent artist and a competent storyteller, but yes, it is disappointing to know that it in fact sucked.
Okay, do you want to ask your question?
Sure.
And then we'll wrap this up.
Well, yeah, so those are all the manga questions. The rest of my questions are basically about gaming and Lovecraft and stuff like that, because I'm a big Lovecraft fan, and I read King of RPGs the second one. In fact, I kept coming down to the booth at Comic-Con because I had a bone to pick with you over King of RPGs.
Ed told us about King of RPGs, and he brought up the first issue, and then Noah read it, and then he was wanting to track
you
it out.
You have a bone to pick?
But well, sure. But I mean, then I read the second volume, and
The second volume, just like the King of RPGs Gaiden. You mean the little?
Right. Yes. And I no longer had the burning passion to go down to your booth and read you the Riot Act or whatever. No. My question, I guess, is about your introduction to gaming. And you mentioned in one of the interviews that you had siblings and that you were gaming with them.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. So, go.
Well, what did you like about King of RPGs 2 more than King of RPGs 1?
Aside from the fact that I think that the art matured in that the poses in particular were a lot more naturalistic, and it just felt to me more like a group of characters that I had played with as opposed to a group of characters who were sort of supposed to represent the different types, which... it's and even like Knights of the Dinner Table, it will sometimes I really feel that he nails it, and sometimes I feel like it's a parody of itself. So I feel like in just one issue, characters had sort of grown into themselves a lot. And there's the particular frame where one of the characters is bleeding out and he's being flown away through the roof. I'm like, man, that's every session that we ever have. Is some character is, you know, at -9 and needs to be bound immediately, and some other character is flying him through the roof. So I felt that it had the authenticity that was that's sort of desperately required in a manga about gaming, which is very close to my heart.
Well, thank you. Well, I hope to do more King of RPGs. I mean, the story, the characters were developing as I wrote them. I mean, they didn't even, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but they don't even have names. These are those stories. That's because I didn't come up with their names until later. But yeah, now they all have. Now they're all like done out, worked out in depth. But at the time, it was just something that I whipped out. But I liked it a lot. No, I've always been a big gamer, and I mean, I always played tabletop RPGs, like, you know, from Dungeons and Dragons to, you know, like Call of Cthulhu, Shadowrun, Vampyr, The Dying Earth, obscure D&D, you know, third-party supplements like Skull and Bones, Pirates Edition, called, you know. I've always been a big role player, and, you know, so it's something that I do when I'm not, like, yes, I know. I mean, for my job, I have to go to the office and, like, punch the clock and read manga, you know, read all day, you know. But I also enjoy, you know, gaming a lot. So, yeah, I'd like to do more King of RPGs in some format. Yeah. Have you guys read Deadliest PR Guy in the World? My comic I did with Patrick Macias?
No.
Oh, okay. I'll have to go give you a copy.
So, I guess my question, and I'm sure it will be developed further in the comic, but who is or who would be the king of RPGs? What is the apotheosis of the player and the apotheosis of the DM?
Well, obviously, basically the king of RPGs, the premise is about it's a shonen manga about a boy who wants to become the greatest dungeon master in the world. And so obviously his real rivals are other dungeon masters, you know, and other people in the gaming industry. But in fact, there's also, yes, but the other characters who appear in the story also, as you pointed out, they are kind of types. And hopefully it's not. It's interesting that you saw they were less type-like in the second story, because actually I really decided to make them more type-like. So maybe actually trying to make them more of, like, particular types actually made them less generic and gave them more personality. I don't know. But in any case, yes, it's about, of course, yes, it's about his plot to make role-playing games the world's most popular pastime, and, yes, and become the world's greatest dungeon master. But of course, you know, of course there are many different versions of role-playing, and he must, so like in any shonen manga, he must face opponents with competing philosophies. But,
face the World of Warcraft guy and stuff.
Well, yes. Well, of course, there's a
one of the players.
Well, actually, no. Well, you will see. You will see. If I continue the comic, yes, there's many. Yes, you've already seen the collectible card games dude and the gaming guy. But of course, there's other tabletop gamers who are also characters. And yes, the real Warcraft player does not actually appear in that comic. Yes. Because the real, real Warcraft players are not not able to engage in inter-party combat and just mean griefing hack and slash to the same extent that you can in a more unstructured environment. There's many more safeguards on your life and your property in Warcraft, you know.
Well, in even King of RPGs, you have, I don't want to spoil it for everyone, but
there's a certain amount of like player killing, player on player violence.
Yeah. Right.
Actually, I've changed the characters. I've changed the characters a lot. I've gotten the whole I've gotten a lot of work on the series since then, and I've just been busy with the book and the Taco USA. I mean, my first priority in comics is the stiff, but I do want to do more King of RPGs. I mean, you know, it's one of the several, partially completed things that I've got kicking around in my head. So, you know, I'm glad that you, I'm glad you like it. I've got quite a lot more of it, if I can find time to complete it.
Wow. Awesome.
I think we should wrap this up and let you go to your panel, but thank you so much for the interview.
Thank you. Yeah, it was real fun.
Yeah.
Hey, look! The Dungeons and Dragons ride! Wow, neat!
Give me a break.
I don't like this!
Whoa! What's happening?
Whoa!
Where are we? Look out!
Fear not, Ranger. Barbarian, magician, thief, cavalier, and acrobat.
Who was that?
That was Venger, the force of evil. I am Dungeon Master, your guide in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons.
There is no escape from the realm of Dungeons and Dragons.